and welcome to a Goofy Friday Total Soccer Show listener question special. My name is Daryl Grove, and I'm joined by a man who is either excited or terrified about VAR in the Premier League next season. His name is Taylor Rockwell.
Thrilled. I am thrilled about VAR in the Premier League next season. And also, hello.
Hello. Why thrilled?
Because I really like VAR. I genuinely do.
From your World Cup experience?
Yep. There is confusion about it, I know. It causes controversy on occasion. What we've said before remains for me, which is that I think of it as like a safety blanket. Of like, you don't have that concern, that fear of a call being missed, mm-hmm. of somebody getting it wrong, of your team being cheated. Maybe it means that your team doesn't get away with stuff, but it still is the case that at the end of the day, there will be ideally fewer mistakes made
yep.
and more goals as a result.
Don't you feel like there's always, every Premier League weekend, there's at least one big controversy and yep. everyone gets really het up about it? And mm-hmm. I wonder if VAR might remove the controversy and then we can all talk about something else.
Ooh,
I'm being way too optimistic.
You're not, actually, because you've just triggered the conspiracy part of my brain, which is that I feel like it's the case that maybe like the big newspapers don't always love writing about the stupid controversy of the week, but they're also aware.
Oh, they do. It sells papers.
That's
it gets
the thing.
Clicks.
It sells papers. And I wonder if there's like a sustained campaign to not have VAR because it gets rid of the drama. Although then I guess you just have VAR drama. Yeah. Should VAR been used?
The papers want referees to wear blindfolds.
Exactly.
But I've just remembered remember Antoine Griezmann,
yep.
France v Australia, and mm-hmm. how even though that yep. involved VAR, there was still a giant scandal.
There was
so
still drama.
The controversies and the conundrums will just be different.
This is true.
I also we'll have more angles of them.
I have another weird interpretation of this.
Yeah.
I know this is strange. I know it's probably overstating it.
It really is Goofy Friday, isn't it?
It definitely is. But I mean this sincerely, that yeah. like, we know like whenever you cut to that booth, there's what, like five or six people in there looking at cameras, looking at screens.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, you've got 19 matches in a weekend. You've probably got to have crews for all those. That's a lot of jobs that come in and more people. I know it sounds silly, but it's true. Like, anything where no one in my mind is losing a job, it's not like the people who weren't being officials are being fired or something.
It's like a post-Brexit employment package.
And maybe it is. Maybe that's tied in there. Maybe that's how this came about.
Creating jobs in England.
Theresa May is trying whatever she can.
Speaking of England, it's also worth noting, we reviewed the USA-England game, the USA game. At the same time, Croatia were beating Spain
this is true.
In the UEFA Nations League, which means when England host Croatia this Sunday mm-hmm. at Wembley, it's 9 a.m. US Eastern kickoff, England win that game, they win the group.
There we go.
England lose that game, I think they get relegated.
Kind of high stakes,
yes.
one way or the other.
So I'm really excited for that game, is what I'm saying.
As much high stakes as the Nations League can be right now.
Yay! Hey, there's high stakes.
I would also say, speaking of that England-USA game, we talked at length about it. And if you would like to hear us do that away from this podcast format, but like maybe if you want the clips of the goals to go with it, our Reddit page has it hosted.
Yes, yeah, so we're really excited about this. We didn't set this up.
I really am.
We're not involved in it,
nope.
but a Reddit Total Soccer Show page has been set up. What? reddit.com/r/Total Soccer Show.
Yep.
We'll put a link in the show notes. And it's growing. People are subscribing. There are people there. And I noticed that people have started posting and they've promised to post. Mm-hmm. When we do an episode and we talk about specific goals, someone's going to put streamable links in the notes there. So
yeah.
you'll be able to see the goals that we're talking about on our Reddit page. I'd encourage people to go and subscribe and get involved in what seems to me, so far, like a very friendly community.
You know I'm going to make you knock on the wood now, right? Thank you, sir. That was probably very loud. I hope that didn't bother people.
It hurt a little bit.
Did you hurt your hand?
Yeah.
Oh, poor buddy. Yeah, it makes me happy because that is on the long list of things that you and I tried like once or twice and then abandoned quickly was
yeah.
we're going to put all the links to all the stuff we talked about in the show notes and then everybody will be able to follow everything. And then we ended up staying like another 45 minutes to write
yeah,
the show notes.
It's hard. So a huge thank you mm-hmm. to the Redditor who is posting video links to the goals that we're talking
Thanks,
about.
Thanks, mods.
Thanks, Mats.
Yep.
So, yeah, one more time, the link will be in the show notes for the Reddit Total Soccer Show page.
There we are.
You ready for some questions?
Always.
All right. So, a reminder, send the questions to totalsoccershow.com/questions. Mm-hmm. There is no shortage right now. Also, to promo ourselves, I want to remind people that if you subscribe and support the show mm-hmm. at $10 a month or more, we guarantee to answer at least one of your questions per month.
That we do, my friend. Some more straightforward than others, some a little goofy, some a little serious. I think we're starting off on a more serious note.
Okay.
Somewhat. John Martin asks, I was watching the Bundesliga game this past weekend, and during the team walkout, the players were going through an equipment check by the match officials. They were showing the studs on their shoes, but curiously, they were also lifting their shorts slightly. What are the officials checking for in the players' shorts?
Weapons.
Yep, that's it. You got any shivs in there? Yeah.
Actually, the longer version of this question John had suggested, was it prison shivs?
I mean, you never know.
I mean, I guess you should check, right?
Yeah, I don't think that's what they're looking for, though.
I think we both instinctively knew the answer to this question, right? Which is that when they just pull the shorts up a little bit, or they ask the players to pull the shorts up, right? It's not like at the airport where they do it. They're basically checking that you're not wearing sliders or undershorts that are a different color to your regulation uniform shorts.
Yes, yeah? That is correct. Yep.
I went and looked up the FIFA law. Mm-hmm. It's part of Law 4 governing player equipment. It says shorts, if undershorts are worn, they are of the same main color as the shorts.
Okay. Yeah, right? that makes sense.
So you can't have black shorts with like bright yellow sliders underneath.
Yeah, which I imagine is kind of problematic for people who, if they have like sponsored equipment where they have like sliders or something that are primarily black and you don't wear black shorts. I wonder if they have to find workarounds for that.
Yeah, I'm sure you'd have to ask the manufacturer to help you out, right?
There we go.
If you're a professional player in, say, the Bundesliga, you're operating at a level where you can ask Under Armour or Sturelli or anyone else, hey, can you do these shorts in a specific color, please?
I genuinely wonder what that cutoff is. Like I don't necessarily
like how famous
disagree.
You have to be?
Well, but I wonder if there is like I don't know, like when like Erzgebirge Aue or whoever it is was in the Bundesliga, could one of their players go, or would whoever their sponsor was be like, come on now.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We're busy worrying about Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund.
If it's Dortmund, if it's not one of the biggest name players, like say Schmelzer, do you think he can easily get that?
Yeah, I think so. I think Dortmund are above that line.
All right.
Yeah.
How about Jadon Sancho before he'd ever played for them?
Maybe. I don't know.
Jadon Sancho now would be okay.
He probably had some weird specific sponsor that would cater to that. So yes, I think he'd probably be able to get away with it too.
Yakko.
Yeah, exactly.
But so, and just to give the reasoning that I understand to be behind this law, that your undershorts have to match your shorts. And that doesn't mean underwear, by the way. It means like sliders.
Yeah.
Compression shorts, right, is what you call them. It's just so that you have uniformity in the uniforms.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Someone can't get confused and accidentally pass to an opposition player because they've got some weird color and you thought maybe that was your team.
Yes.
I think is the rough idea.
My guess would also
look professional?
Yeah, that too. And then I think there's probably an element of like absolutism when it comes to uniforms that you sort of have to remove lots of possibilities, you make it as basic as possible.
Yeah.
Because you will have was it Cameroon who showed up at a World Cup without sleeves on their jerseys?
Yes,
that's not
I
allowed.
Liked it.
And you can't have like a one piece uniform. You have to have two separate pieces, shorts and a jersey. So I imagine it's also a way...
Stifling creativity, FIFA.
A little bit, but I imagine to your point, it isn't just like, who cares if you have, you know, yellow sliders? No one's ever going to see those unless you're sliding. But I have a feeling it's to stop people from wearing
Are sliders named sliders because of when you slide?
That would be my guess.
I thought it was just because they slide up and down your leg.
I doubt that because I'm pretty sure once they're up there, they're supposed to stay up there and not slide so much.
All right.
But I would say that I think it's probably that way if you were wearing long ones, if you had like bright yellow ones, that probably can be a little bit distracting if you're playing a bright yellow team. So I'm guessing that FIFA just made it the extreme of must match the shorts, even if they're just like little sliders that you won't usually see.
All right, I've got another question. How far are our Redditors willing to go? Will we get, for example, a link to an image of that Cameroon uniform?
I guess we'll find out, won't we? Seems like it's asking a lot.
It is. We'll find out over the weekend. Ready for the next question?
Sure.
Am I asking it or are you asking it?
You can ask it.
All right, this is from Jeremy Griever. Jeremy says, a few young US men's national team players are getting Champions League playing experience. So what, Pulisic, McKennie? And playing with teammates who have won the World Cup. Do we run the risk of these players being underserved by a national team coach whose highest coaching experience is Major League Soccer? Jeremy also adds, I hope this doesn't sound too anti-MLS, it's just a concern. So I think Jeremy's making the assumption that maybe someone like, say, Greg Berhalter is getting the US
just
national team job.
Yeah.
I don't know where he got that idea, but I'm imagining Greg Berhalter when I answer this question. Will Greg Berhalter underserve players who have Champions League experience?
So I don't mean to, like, misinterpret or overinterpret or whatever Jeremy's question, but it's probably important to look at that word for a second because
underserved.
Yes. What do you think he means by that in terms of this overall question? Because I feel like you could take this as, is he saying that an MLS coach isn't good enough to manage players who play in the Champions League? Is it that the players wouldn't necessarily respect that coach, that they would help with the development?
I take it to mean that Jeremy thinks that maybe a Champions League coach is operating at a certain level and knows certain things and knows certain tactical maneuvers and instructions.
Certical.
So, yeah. Whereas an MLS coach maybe knows like a level below that.
So that would be the assumption there.
I think so,
All right. So then I would say a couple things to that. First of all, And I think I might be stealing this point from you, or at least some of the wording. But I would say just because that's where the manager has managed does not mean that is his ceiling. And I think yes. that's an important way to look at it, is that – I mean, we've talked about it before. Americans don't always get that many opportunities in Europe. When they do, it's with Swansea and it's like for 2 weeks. And outside of that, it's usually with like lower division, lower, mm-hmm. lesser known sides, right? So I think you have to start somewhere. And I think you could look at this as, say, Greg Berhalter. Yeah, he's only been in MLS so far. That doesn't mean that's where he's going to stay. That doesn't mean that's all he's capable of. If he manages the USA and it goes well, maybe he gets another national team gig. Maybe yeah. somebody else comes calling.
Okay, yeah, I think I'm with you on that. It's not worth assuming that Greg Berhalter's ceiling is Major League Soccer. Right. Like, he could manage in the Champions League, and we don't know how he would do,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And then I would flip it around, though, and say take some of those Champions League managers and put them in a position where they're managing the U.S. national team, and I don't know if they would be ready for that job, that responsibility. And I think it could be the same sort of problem in reverse, which is to say that I think national teams aren't just about how you utilize your best players. Oftentimes, the teams that try to do that are the ones that end up losing because mm-hmm. they're just playing the ball to one person.
Soccer is a weak link sport.
It is. Yeah. So it's about how you cover your vulnerabilities. It's about how you manage team chemistry and team camaraderie and figuring out. We talked a little bit, I think you and I off air because of some research we've been doing. We'll leave it at that. About the 1970 Brazil team uh-huh. and the idea that like they really had to figure out how do you fit all these components together and balance yeah. it out. And it wasn't just about let's get the best players on there. It was the best players that can play together.
Yeah.
And that's another thing a manager has to do.
All right, let me ask you this though. I mean, I want to test the basis of this mm-hmm. question. Is managing in the Champions League something that definitely makes you a better coach? Like if Greg Berhalter now had 3 or 6 group stage Champions League games under his belt, would he definitely be a better coach than he is now? Or is it just a thing he could add to his resume? Like, would he know yeah. something then that he doesn't know now?
I would say this. I'm not trying to be difficult, but I would say yeah. managing well in the Champions League. If you manage a team in the Champions League that lost every game 9-0, no, you're probably not getting a lot out of it aside from how to lose poorly.
Yeah.
I would say this. Yeah, I think generally speaking, if you're managing the Champions League, it is, in my opinion, the best club competition in the world. So you really do learn a bunch on the fly that like maybe...
But like some new tactical scheme? Some level of player that you haven't come up against?
Yeah, basically that.
Yeah?
I think it's that. And the level of technical ability as well. That like maybe you're not used to a player... we talked about this a little bit, but like Bonucci being able to play an inch-perfect 60-yard pass. There's not that many players in Major League Soccer, let alone defenders, who can do that. So the idea of like, oh, that guy can do that, I've got to learn how to defend against that.
All right, the flip side of this is, yes, there's no Bonucci in MLS because mm-hmm. MLS is like attack heavy, but you have coached Higuain, mm-hmm. Federico Higuain. He's coached against other really big name players, right? Like Zlatan and Ibrahimovic mm-hmm. and Giovinco and Martinez and Almiron and guys like that, right?
Yeah.
So it's not as if there's necessarily a standard of player you haven't come up against. Wayne Rooney.
I mean,
he beat Wayne Rooney.
Those are also not like Wayne Rooney playing in 2006 at his peak.
He's an England international.
And it's also the case that you're listing individuals. Yeah. And now imagine all those individuals on one team.
And that's the
Champions League.
Okay.
Yeah. So I take that point and I get why you would like that, like, or why that might be a good thing for a manager to have that experience. I would say, though, that, and this is maybe a little strange, maybe a little controversial, but I would say that just because a manager has had success in one place doing one thing does not mean that that's necessarily going to translate. And I think that you could say that reputations can be earned. And look at Yogi Löw, who mm-hmm. did not have that much of a managerial pedigree, takes over Germany. Here we are.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think,
because you could say, a guy who's only been an assistant coach for the last few years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I would spin it around and say that Greg Berhalter maybe has more familiarity with the players. Again, we're sticking with Berhalter, but generally speaking,
we know why. And we know why Jeremy asked the question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you have like more familiarity with the players, you have more idea what those players can do. And so you can then hit the ground running, maybe have different tactics that utilize some of the vulnerabilities to make them strengths. And you can
of
do
the
little
MLS
things,
players?
Or just generally speaking of the player pool that maybe you can try different stuff because you're not branded to a system and you're not being brought in to play a 3-5-2 but doing it this way. Like Gareth Southgate, I feel like 6 months ago, if the United States had hired him out of nowhere, he kind of has this system that he plays, and that's what we've come to expect from him. So then are we expecting him to do that?
Actually, I think Gareth Southgate is a really good example. Mm-hmm. He's never managed in the Champions League.
Nope.
I don't think he ever played in the Champions League. He had an okay spell with Middlesbrough mm-hmm. as a coach. And then he sort of joined the FA as a career employee, managed the under-21s. When he was appointed only after the Sam Allardyce mm-hmm. scandal, no one was that excited, right? I think international management is an interesting thing where it doesn't necessarily just go to what's the highest level you've coached at? Okay, you're the man for the job.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. 100%. And I think it can be about what you bring to the table. I would say this, and this is where, if we want to go down this road, this is where I'm frustrated with U.S. soccer, is that where do you find that stuff out? In interviews. You find out what the manager is going to bring, what their perspective is, what their philosophy is. You could even extend it to you have players come in and meet with the candidates and see how well they get along. If you're worried about players like Christian Pulisic thinking, who's this guy? Why should I play for him? We'll bring them in. Weston McKennie the same. Or even, I don't know.
Do you think that's possibly a problem with Berhalter?
What do you mean?
That like Pulisic is like...
No, I don't.
No? Okay.
I mean... No disrespect intended, but I'm sure there will be some there. Is that like, I mean, he's been playing or hasn't been playing for 13 months under Dave Sarakin.
Yeah, who was an assistant coach and an associate head coach at Galaxy for a while.
But I am fairly confident has not managed in the Champions League either.
Yeah.
So it sort of is when you're a national team player, it's not quite like if Manchester United need a new manager, you want somebody who has that pedigree. Otherwise, maybe people will be reluctant to go sign there.
Mm-hmm.
With the U.S. national team, you are where you are. And so I think it sort of is about embracing the coach who's there. I still think that interviews maybe would have helped a bit more with that because then you have a clear idea of the philosophy and general understanding of what this manager is going to bring.
Maybe they've interviewed Greg Berhalter 100 times.
That could be.
two of the quick things I would like to say on this is, one, I think the nature of the U.S. men's national team is that you actually – I think we benefit from a coach that has Major League Soccer experience because you're still going to be pulling a bunch of players from Major League Soccer.
Yeah.
So honestly, if I had to choose – give me a coach who knows the Champions League and no MLS, or a coach that knows MLS and doesn't know the Champions League, I'd go with the MLS guy because it's going to form sort of the core or at least maybe half-ish of what your squad looks like.
Yeah.
So there's that. The other thing is I think I want an American coach, right?
Okay.
So for that reason, you don't want some random Champions League manager. Maybe the long term, it's someone like Jesse Marsh, who's Red Bull Leipzig, Rasenball Sport Leipzig, assistant coach right now. Maybe one day he's the coach with Champions League experience.
Yes, because one more point on that one is like if you have a manager who's maybe not one, but like managing the Champions League consistently, done really well, gotten to the knockout round, has been rumored to sign for a bunch of different clubs or a bunch of different national teams, the United States brings him in with a godfather offer just because they're getting paid. I mean more so like a
either
many,
your signature or your brains are going to be
many zeros on that paycheck offer.
I see.
I think that doesn't guarantee that coach is going to care. I think you're right that there is an element of like, I've managed in the Champions League. I was linked with Spain. Why should I care? Whatever, it's fine. Like, there's always the reputation, but I don't know if that weighs as much as, an American coach wants to do well for the U.S. national team, is aware that raises their pedigree, and then maybe that means other people will come calling later on.
I've got the great parallel. Fabio Capello managing England, Champions League manager, versus Southgate managing England.
Yeah. Fabio Capello managing Russia. That also did not work out. I can't remember the manager's name this time around, but having a Russian manager and some other things seem to have benefited them in this World Cup.
Final thing, before anyone...
Cheryshev? Cheryshev. Churches off. There it is.
There you go.
That was the Russian manager.
Before anyone tweets at us, yes, we know that Greg Berhalter has coached in Europe for Hammarby.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember him being in the Champions League, but he has some European, Scandinavian experience.
He does. Yes. He does. Mm-hmm. That makes all the difference.
Okay, anything else to add?
No, I think I've about covered everything I wanted to cover and talked a lot.
Okay. Speaking of covering things, do you remember we talked about player equipment earlier? Did you notice Will Trapp playing for the US? He had his ring covered.
He did.
When he was playing against England.
Which is confusing to me because it's a weird interpretation of the laws of the game, because I believe wedding bands you're allowed to keep on.
No.
But jewelry you're not allowed to cover.
Okay.
So like, for example, like you'll be asked to remove a watch or a bracelet or a necklace. No one's ever asked me to remove my wedding ring. I feel like they just kind of...
Do you cover it for games when
you
play?
No, I just wear it. I've lost a wedding ring playing soccer before.
I know at least one or two Central Virginia Soccer Association referees listen to this show. Someone might be looking at your finger on Sunday.
We'll see.
Bring some tape just in case.
I feel like they kind of just maybe look the other way, but I feel like maybe in the laws of the game it says something about wedding bands. I could be wrong though, because then, as we established with the sliders, some wedding bands are bigger than others. That could be problematic.
Well, speaking of wedding bands, maybe one of the reasons they let you wear them is because they're so valuable and so important.
Yeah.
And if you are ready to make that...
I already said that I lost one during a game, but sure, whatever.
That big decision. Don't be like Taylor. If you're ready to make that big decision and buy an engagement ring or a wedding band, actually specifically an engagement ring, then you should use our sponsor, Loop Jewelry. Loop Jewelry is sponsoring today's Total Soccer Show.
That's right. Loop is engagement ring shopping for the modern couple. They are transforming every step of buying engagement rings into a simpler, more enjoyable, and collaborative experience. And I will say this about my personal experience. The reason why I have literally lost two wedding rings was because I went to a bunch of different places to have sizings done at various times. Lots of different sizes. And if you're ordering online, that doesn't necessarily mean they're guaranteed to fit. Both of them were too loose. Both of them just fell right off. That's why. So it's worth noting that Loop is dedicated to helping you through the process to find a ring that fits.
So this is specifically engagement rings for modern couples. And yeah, you essentially get a one-on-one guide. I want to say it's an engagement ring Sherpa. Mm-hmm. We'll sort of walk you up the very steep mountain of shopping for engagement rings because it's a big thing. It means a lot. And you want someone who knows what they're doing to guide you through the process.
Yeah, it also helps that, you know, you can find things for a little less of the price. They work with leading diamond and jewelry manufacturers to bring you top-tier rings at 30% lower than typical diamond retailers, which means no sales pitch, no industry jargon.
So if you're going to follow Beyonce's advice, then go to Loop.
And you always should.
Go to loopjewelry.com/pages/TSS.
Maybe not Beyonce like in Destiny's Child era, but like Beyonce on her own. Follow that advice.
That link will be in the show notes, loopjewelry.com/pages/TSS. And if you go through the process and you start on that page, then if you spend $1,000 or more, you'll get $100 off if you go through that page.
There we are. So thank you to Loop Jewelry for sponsoring today's episode of the Total Soccer Show. As Daryl Grove said, a link will be in the show notes. And I just want to add, my wife is more than capable of paying her own bills. So again, Destiny's Child, maybe not the best guardians there.
Well, thank you to Loop Jewelry for sponsoring today's show. Next question, Taylor Rockwell. Are you ready?
I am. Would you like me to ask it or would you like to ask it?
Why don't, I feel like you've done the research on this one, right? So ask me and I'll give you my best guess.
Sure. Okay. Eric Rosner
I'm bracing myself because I know I haven't researched it.
I feel like you'd be able to put it together. How much influence does the fourth official have over a game and specifically decisions? I can't ever remember seeing one actually overturn a call because of something a manager has said. The only explanation I can see from a manager's perspective is the cathartic release of simply yelling at an official.
So I want to say that the fourth official is there as a pressure valve. Uh-huh. So the managers don't yell at the center ref, they yell at the fourth official. I don't imagine him wearing earplugs and he's just there to absorb whatever's coming at him.
So I would say, like, unofficially, I would agree with that. That is certainly not what they're actually there for.
No, I know that.
Yeah, but I think you're kind of not wrong because I think a referee who's managing a game, managing two sides, getting lots of, you know, words in his ear from different players, mm-hmm. maybe that lowers the tolerance a little bit for a manager from the sidelines screaming stuff.
Yeah.
And I think the fourth official being there, you will see the managers complain to that fourth official first.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, because it's not the fourth official making the decision, it's a little bit like if I do something that annoys somebody but they can only talk to you,
yeah.
they're going to talk to you. And so it's sort of like you're the indirect conduit, so you're going to take a little bit of it, but it's not you who did the thing.
And then can I assume the fourth official cannot overrule the center ref?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's not as if the coach on the side can disagree with a decision on the field and argue so convincingly to the fourth official mm-mm. that the fourth official will be like, oh.
No.
Right?
Not at
okay.
all.
So not
and,
at
I mean,
all.
And the fourth official is supposed to like help out if you know, the referee needs something or the fourth official thinks the referee has missed something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely not like, oh, this coach says you did something wrong. You should come over and talk to him. Not really how that works.
Okay, can I have a quick guess? So added time when they hold mm-hmm. up the number, like 3 minutes of added time. Does he – I don't think he calculates that. I think the center ref calculates it.
Yep.
But the fourth official holds the number up.
Displaying it to the crowd, yes. To
does
the spectators,
he,
yeah.
Does he hold up the substitution numbers?
You got
or does
it.
He – yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yep.
I assume he checks the players as they're coming on to make sure their shorts match
yep.
and their
mm-hmm.
cleats aren't made of diamonds.
I think that might be before the match, but I think somebody subbing on, they're definitely checked out by the fourth official. Yep.
Okay. Does he – he is there in case the center ref gets injured.
Yep.
He's basically the reserve ref.
So I believe that is a like league-by-league rule
okay.
that I think that can be the case, but it can also be the case that they have other officials waiting mm-hmm. or that they'll discontinue the match
okay,
depending
then,
on the severity.
In some cases,
mm-hmm.
the fourth official is there as a substitute ref
yep.
if needed, if someone gets injured.
Yep.
Okay.
And then there's a few other things, or do you
okay.
want to keep guessing?
I mean, I could also guess – I know that the coaches have their technical area mm-hmm. with the dotted lines. I would bet that he almost polices that And yep. He runs over and tackles them and rolls them back in the area.
Not quite that. But yeah, managing.
It'd be more fun if you did that, right?
I forget what the actual language is, but it's like along the lines of like maintaining a like an air of like respectability around the technical areas. Okay. Yeah, something like that. Which
does
means
that mean stand between the two coaches so they can't go at each other?
Pretty much. Pretty much it does. Other things.
Don't let Pep near Caleb Porter.
Yeah, probably not.
To
that doesn't go so well.
Yeah.
Maintaining a backup record of the score and cautions or sending offs.
Ah,
so say if you are an official who's handed out three yellow cards, mm-hmm. maybe you need the fourth official to say, that was one too many.
External hard drive.
Wait, what?
The fourth official is an external hard drive, like when you store extra data.
Why is it going to be another thing? Just let them be what
know.
They are.
All right. Things can be two things.
Yeah, and then another one is relaying information from non-participants to the center official. So
who would that be?
So if you've got fan unrest, they can let the official know if maybe the center ref is focused on what's happening on the field and there's chaos behind the goal, something like that. If there's a pitch invader that the official hasn't noticed.
They have to tackle them.
Yeah, exactly. Or it can also be like little things like power outages in the stadium that could cause problems or could cause like electrical malfunctions or whatever. If one of the cameras isn't working anymore, the official needs to know about it.
So this means the main ref can focus on the game.
Exactly.
And let the fourth official worry about floodlights going out or fans running on or all that kind of stuff.
You got it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, and there are other tasks in there as well. But yeah, it's mostly kind of policing that sideline, keeping things orderly. And they will definitely report to the center official if a manager or part of the technical staff or what have you has gone over the line in their interpretation, and then I think that can be
literally
grounds.
Or metaphorically.
Yes, I think anything. I think it can, and then that can be grounds for a yellow or a dismissal, as we talked about before.
Yeah.
Maybe this one should get posted on Reddit. Is the Arsene Wenger being sent off for kicking a bottle? That was the fourth official calling over the official and saying,
"Oh,
hey,
with
good Strachan
yep. commentating." Do you know what?
You cannot kick that bottle away.
We'll put that one in the show notes. It's so good.
You did what?
You have the link, right? Because you've sent that to me before.
I mean, it's on the internet. Yeah,
it's on the internet. Oh, thanks. I'll look there.
I'm just saying, no, I don't have it handy. YouTube.com/da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
That's a weird impression of Gordon Strachan.
Yeah, you know.
So I think it's fair to say the fourth official has a long list of things to mm-hmm. do, but also sometimes just has to stand there. You know what I mean? Like, he's there in case things happen, but he might also just be not doing anything for
actually, I would disagree.
Right.
I think that is rooted in a like television perspective where we only see the fourth official hold up extra time, hold up the substitutions, and really when a coach is yelling at the fourth official. But I think there's a lot of checking in and checking the players and communicating to the coaches what's happening and doing a lot of back and forth with the center official as well. So I think there's a lot of stuff that we don't see unless we're in the stand. So maybe we should have one where we go to a game and just watch the fourth official to see how active he or she is.
I mean, okay.
I do not want to do that.
Maybe you do that and I'll watch the game.
Yeah,
I'll let you know.
Hard pass.
I'll let you know if anything happens. You ready for the next question?
Sounds like a job for our future potential possible intern. Yes.
Okay, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Kit Wirtz with the next question. Kit wants to know, hypothetically, so this is always going to be good. Hypothetically, if soccer had a skill showcase competition similar to the NBA, which Taylor stands for National Basketball Association, dunk contest, three-point competition, etc., what do you think would make the most interesting skill competitions and who would be the winners or front runners of these competitions?
All right. Well, first of all, I just want to say congratulations to Kit Wirtz for having the greatest superhero sidekick name I think I can imagine. Kit Wirtz is pretty good in terms – like I feel like that's an alias for Robin. Just throwing that out there.
Do you think that's what Kit would want? No one wants to be Robin.
I mean, I don't know. Could be worse. You could be Alfred.
I think you could be very deep cover for Batman.
Okay. I've got a few ideas. I'll get us going with...
Yeah, so we've picked out two each,
yeah.
Right? Okay, so let's go back and forth one at a time.
I'm going to go an oldie but a goodie and also one of my favorites. I want to see NASL penalty shootouts. That's what I want to see.
As a skill contest?
Yeah, because I think you... first of all, it is a big skill. I mean, it's the equivalent of going on a breakaway,
mm-hmm.
and how often did we saw it the other night with Christian Pulisic. Breakaways don't mean they're automatically going to be goals. It's about your composure in front and reading the goalkeeper, like a lot of physics and geometry to know exactly what you need to do.
Yeah.
And you could even make it as simple as once, and if, say it was an MLS competition, if you ever had equal numbers in both conferences, you could have one goalie from one side of the conference versus one player from the other and kind of go that way to see which conference wins.
So an MLS/NASL shooter.
Yeah.
So MLS did do this in the 90s, mm-hmm. right? They did the NASL-style penalty kicks to decide games at some point.
That could be.
And they also did a skills competition,
yep.
right? So
uh-huh.
we're kind of imagining bringing that back, but making it better. Making it good enough that it could stick around.
Yeah. There was a trick. There was definitely like a fastest like dribbler 90s, and stuff, right? But I remember there also being like a trick shot one, and I think it was Mauricio Cienfuegos just destroyed everybody without really making it look like he was trying.
Can you imagine how much better an MLS All-Star Skills Contest would be now, given the level of player that we have to work with?
It'd be pretty good.
Yeah?
It still comes down.
Zlatan.
It still comes down to the competition they're doing, because if it is just sort of pair it, like if it is, can you hit the goal from 18 yards out 9 times in a row? That's less exciting than I would say an NASL penalty shootout. What about you?
Okay, the first one I've got. Mm-hmm. You mentioned a dribbling competition. I didn't know that existed.
I think it was just like fastest dribble. I just remember Landon Donovan with, I believe, bleach blonde hair running very fast with the ball at his feet.
Okay. Oh, did I ask you who do you think would be the sort of front runner in the MLS star shootout?
Okay. Yeah. In terms of mostly just because I was thinking about like goalkeepers who I think of as being good coming off their line. So I'd say like Stefan Fry and Andre Blake would be very good.
So we're going MLS only here.
Yeah. And then I would say I think Giovinco has the. The
in goal?
The calm composure to finish in a 1v1 setting. And I think Lucho Acosta does too, because he's got some of those tricks and flicks. He's not afraid to go for a scoop. I feel like a player like Zlatan might be a little bit too, like, I must prove that I'm Zlatan by doing crazy things. Yeah, and that doesn't always guarantee success.
It would be interesting to see which players do better with more time to decide and which players do better with less time.
Ooh, good point.
Right? Because that would be a big, big thing.
Yeah.
You were impressed with Andre Blake coming off his line against Man City, even though he conceded in the end against Maxi Morales, but he was fast.
Mm-hmm. If he came out against Man City, I'd be even more impressed.
Oh, is that what I said?
Yes.
I was just picturing Sky Blue.
It works. It's all the same.
What if we tweaked yours and added a defender? Would that be too many defenders if it was one-on-one? Or how about if it was 2v1? Two attackers
against
a defender.
It's already very hard to score these penalties. Okay. Like, I feel like the most of the time it was like 1-0 after 5 takes each.
Well, I've watched some of these old MLS skills competitions, and it always seemed to me that there wasn't enough going on because there's only one player that everybody's watching, and so therefore things don't happen that quickly. So I always feel like adding more players would make it more interesting.
I mean, there's two players in this.
I guess you're
goalkeeper
right.
And an attacker.
I guess you're right.
I also think, like,
I'll stop meddling with your idea.
That's all right. And from a realistic standpoint, then, I would also add that these competitions are generally designed to limit the amount of contact and potential injuries in an all-star game format. Yeah.
Okay.
So if you've got a 1v1 defender going in on slide tackles and being physical and battling, that might lend itself to a few cuts and bruises.
So if Chad Marshall crushes Sebastian Giovinco and costs the league a fortune in marketing.
Yeah, there is that too.
So I've got one that may even already exist, but I didn't know. I think I've done this right because it's two people at the same time. There's no contact. It's the dribbling slalom sprint. So two players line up on the sidelines. It's a width. It's width, right? So it's side to side. And there is, about 7 to 10 cones placed across the field. And it's a literal sprint with the ball at your feet to slalom through the cones to the other end. Mm-hmm. Then sprint back, then you get a fresh ball, and you have to slalom through the cones to the other end. It's a race between the two players.
Okay.
So essentially, what I wanted to see is, who is the fastest player dribbling with the ball? If you just made it a straight line, then players could cheat, right? And basically just kick the ball really far ahead and run after it, and then it's just who's the fastest with their legs and no ball. But if you put the cones, then the players have to, they wouldn't be too tight, they'd be quite spread out, but players would have to like do big zigzags in and out of the few cones, then we find out who's the fastest with the ball.
I think that might be one of the ones they had originally. We'll have to check and see.
I wasn't here till 2005.
There's a quick like 3-minute video that I think was doing the rounds on Twitter couple months ago. That may have been the one that I'm thinking
of. So did I invent a thing that already exists?
You may have.
Oh,
you may
no.
have.
I thought maybe the winner of this would be Miggy Almiron.
Yeah, that checks out.
Yeah?
I think so.
At pace, with the ball, under control.
Alfonso Davies, maybe? But yeah, I think Miggy Almiron is
I'm not sure he's officially a member anymore.
Oh, good point. Good point. Yeah, so yeah, I'll give it to you then. Miggy Almiron is a solid nominee.
Okay.
My other one would be, it's a game that I think Daryl Grove does not like, or at least does not like playing, but I would go World Cup, and I think that's a very good one.
Wembley.
Wembley, if you want to go that route with the formerly prestigious stadium
brilliant.
As the name.
I love this.
Yes.
Please explain for people who don't
know. So it's basically...
For the one person listening that doesn't know.
Sure. World Cup, I mean, there's a ton of different names, as you've already said. It's basically one person in goal, and then you've got teams of two. Usually you can do single player, but teams of two is more fun.
Going back home, we used to do Wembley singles or Wembley doubles.
Yeah.
So you could do it all on your own, you would do teams of two.
Yeah, but I like teams of two.
Yeah, me too.
And it's basically, say you've got 8 teams competing. It would be first team to score, they're safe to the next round.
You go through. It's like a cup competition.
Exactly.
You score, you go through.
Exactly, until you've only got 2 teams left. When one team scores, that team stays in. The other team is eliminated.
Yep.
And then you bring everybody else back in. So it still has the same idea of the team that's in last or like,
is eliminated.
Is eliminated, but the team that's in the longest that still progresses is therefore probably more tired because it's been a bit of a battle.
Uh-huh.
So the team that scores first is a bit fresher for the next round.
Yep, and eventually you get to a Wembley or World Cup final, and then it's two teams of two. Mm-hmm. And by the way, you're always all shooting into the same goal, right?
Yep.
So each play starts with the goalkeeper just kicking it off, and then away we go.
Indeed.
All right, I don't think you're going to hit the don't get injured thing.
Yeah, maybe
I would make all these players sign a waiver, but I would watch this. I would definitely watch this.
I feel like this one, though, lends itself a little bit to, like, it's friendly competitive where, like, you could go in for a slide tackle, but you'd kind of be that person. So
maybe it's
a little bit more relaxed.
I imagine the players laughing as they do this as well.
Yeah, exactly.
This would be brilliant.
And then I'm going to say you could do all, like...
They should cancel the actual All-Star game and just do this.
I'd be fine with that.
Yeah.
They could do, like, Eastern Conference, like, all Eastern Conference players playing each other and a Western Conference one, and you could have the goalkeepers, like, against them so that you don't have any sort of risk of bias. Or you could do everybody's in there, and then you bring in a celebrity goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Whoever, like, an actual goalkeeper.
Not like Simon Cowell.
No, but say it was like in the middle of the summer and I don't know, Manuel Neuer had nothing else going on. You could bring Manuel Neuer in to get the headlines. But the other wrinkle that I want is I want to go way over the top with it. And like once you score your goal, say you're the first team that scores, you get to go to like the sideline, but it's this super nice, like you've got like Lazy Boy recliners and you've got like masseuses there ready for you. You've got all the refreshments you need. And when you're eliminated, it's just the aluminum bench that you have to go sit on and watch everybody else.
There's a lot of – the thing I like about MLS is there's a lot of showman, right? So you could have like people really like putting their feet up making a big show and like taunting the other players in a preferably in a good-natured way.
I have a
feeling they've got their feet up on the Lazy Boy.
There would be a lot of Spanish language trash talk coming from Miguel Almirón and Joseph Martinez, if I were guessing.
They'd probably be through first every time as well.
It's a decent chance.
So this isn't one, but you just reminded me to talk about goalie wars.
Yep. Oh,
could you just have that?
You could. I mean, I love goalie wars.
Yeah.
It probably will end in a few separated shoulders and like broken fingers. But yeah, you know, it's fine.
So goalie wars, if I've got it right, goalie wars is two goals reasonably close together.
Yeah.
And goalkeepers like either throw or shoot balls at each other. You have to like save it or catch it and then go back at the other guy, right?
It seems like when proper goalkeepers play it, it tends to be a lot more throwing the ball because I think there's a high velocity, lot of accuracy element of that. When it's non-goalkeepers, it tends to be catching the ball, putting it on the ground and then kicking it as hard as you can.
So goalie wars would be a good skill. Contest. Will you let me have that as a freebie? Because that just came to me mid-conversation.
Sure.
All right. My other one is my attempt to recreate the dunk contest.
Uh-huh.
It's the volley contest.
Okay.
So there's a player at the top of the box. There's no goalkeeper. There's like maybe just a wooden thing in goal that you have to avoid. And you have balls served into you. And what I'm going to have is a machine that like pops the ball in so it's consistent how the ball is coming, right? So you're not reliant on the cross, right? And then you essentially just have to volley into the goal with as much flair as you can.
Right.
And you can take as many touches as you want. The ball just can't hit the floor. So you can take it on the chest, like lift it over your head, do a trick, then a scissor kick. And that's your attempt at your flair volley. So it's similar to the dunk contest, in my opinion.
I mean, yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
And did you say there is a goalkeeper? There's just a thing in
goal
that you have to avoid.
I was imagining just like a wooden dummy of a goalkeeper. But maybe, because the problem is if you have an actual goalkeeper, someone could pull off some incredible skill, but it's still quite hard to score from like 18 yards out. Right?
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I'd say, no goalkeeper. Or maybe just like a cardboard cutout that goes in the goal and sits there.
How about a defender that can't use their hands?
You just really want people to get hurt, don't you? So now you've just got a person who can't use their hands scrambling around a goal and like hurling themselves into the post.
With their face.
Perfect. Perfect.
But you know what I'm saying? There could be like, if say Zlatan would, I think, be the obvious easy winner for this, assuming he stays in Major League Soccer. I could see him doing a lot of very like nice like flicks over the head and then volleys and the whole crowd would go, ooh.
I'm down.
Yeah.
I feel like you might have some trouble with the consistency of the delivery, even if you had a machine.
Why?
Because I don't know if
have you met machines?
Does that
very
exist?
Consistent.
Does that
exist?
Yeah,
like tennis and baseball, you get those machines that just serve balls at you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Does one of those exist for soccer?
It does, actually. Okay. And I think an ex-player invented it. Yeah.
Now we're on it. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I'm with you, because I know they have them for football. I feel like that's, maybe you could just like make the wheels a little bit wider apart, and then that could work.
Yep.
And it is just then, you spin the wheels and it goes. So, okay, that could work. Let's just hope the wind doesn't get too bad at one point.
I think you just have to lick your finger and adjust for wind. Do you have another one?
No. Nope.
It occurs to me that if they actually did this, especially in Major League Soccer, they would get it sponsored and it would be sponsored by EA Sports.
Yep.
And they'd end up doing the FIFA video game
Almost
skills.
Certainly, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they've even done it for YouTube already, right?
Yeah, I think so.
The Major League Soccer videos. That it would definitely be branded in that way and we would go down that route pretty
fast.
Yeah, we
would. Yeah, I think so. I think it would be a lot more static skills competitions as opposed to people, again, having a risk of injury.
Yep. But we have giant tires rolling across the field.
Exactly. Exactly. It's totally good for you.
We have one more question to go.
We do.
But first, today's show is sponsored by... Tighten up, Taylor! It's Grip 6. Today's show is sponsored by Grip 6 Belts.
I'm already tied up. I'm wearing my Grip 6
Are
right
you
now,
really?
My friend.
Mm-hmm. Prove it.
I mean, I don't really want to stand up and adjust, mess the levels, but I am. Good for you, my friend. A bright orange belt buckle, no less,
yes.
With the Total Soccer Show logo emblazoned on the front.
It certainly is. Mm-hmm. But that's a tough one to get. You can get that if you email us, ask us for the logo, and then you send it to Grip 6 yourself.
You didn't think this through when you stood up, did
didn't
you?
Didn't think this through when I stood up, did I? Let's explain what Grip 6 is, though.
Sure.
Grip 6 is not just a regular belt.
It is not.
It genuinely is an American company in Utah that has reinvented how belt buckles work, right? So
yeah.
Instead of what you normally do, like poke the thing through the hole and all that sort of stuff, it's the badger teeth.
Yeah.
The grip, you slide the belt through, it's webbing, and it grips on tight once you fold it back, and it does not come loose. I'm still amazed by the science of this thing.
Do you win charades every time you play charades?
You
were very good. Daryl did badger teeth. Then he showed the gripping happening. Then he showed how it wouldn't come apart. It was very good hand acting, I have to say.
Thank you.
But it also
I thought you were about to mock me. I didn't know how confident
it
was.
Not at all, my friend, because it was very indicative of what Grip 6 does. Those belts, they stay in place. They don't loosen up. So, you know, you don't have to worry about adjusting and dealing with all that stuff. And then the other reason why I do wear my Grip 6 belt oftentimes when we're recording is because on days when we know we're going to be in the studio for a good long while, belts can get uncomfortable a little bit if the belt buckles too big, if it's like cold metal and it sits in there. It's not very fun.
Mm-hmm.
Grip 6, you don't have that issue.
They're also slimline and lightweight and very, very strong. And they look a lot smarter than people expect. Here's my very good example. I was back in Michigan recently, and I wore a Grip 6 belt to a church event.
Oh, boy. Was it the orange buckle one?
It wasn't the orange buckle one. It was a little more low-key. But I said to my wife, I said, hey, I'm going to wear my Grip 6 belt for this event. And she was like, are you sure? Because she didn't trust it. She hadn't really paid attention to it. And I said, I'm going to put it on and show you. Put it on. She was like, yeah, that looks great.
Yeah.
So she doubted it because it wasn't a traditional belt. Looked even better than a regular belt.
Oh, I could have told you that.
I was the best belted person there.
My wife has to steal mine because it can fit her too, because that's the thing. You don't have to rely on the belt holes and the loops and everything.
Yeah,
she's definitely worn mine on more than one occasion.
So people should probably buy more than one.
That's probably a good
idea. The good news is if you go to grip6.com/TSS, there's a special Total Soccer Show landing page with special Total Soccer Show deals there for a 3-pack of belts and buckles, 3 belts, 3 buckles. You get 33% off if you go to grip6.com/TSS. If you buy just the one, it's 20% off at grip6.com/TSS. There are specific discount codes there, but they're behind the Total Soccer Show page. So you have to go to the Total Soccer Show page.
That makes sense. So
grip6.com/TSS. Sorry.
And the belt like package, the multi-belt one would be 33% off, an individual one 20% off once again. And once again, thank you to Grip 6 for sponsoring today's episode with all of their many badger teeth.
I'm going to say we're getting towards holiday gift season. Uh-huh. I look at this as one of those ideal holiday gifts. I think I might be taking one home to England with me.
All right.
Maybe two.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty good idea. I think I might do the same. But before we can do that, I don't need to go to some terrible place. It's cold. I can stay here where it's cold. We got one more question. This one comes from Jeff Emmelin. What would be the better team? One made from the entire current U.S. men's national team pool?
Which is how we do the U.S. national team right now.
Correct.
Right? Yep.
Or one made from players of any nationality playing in Major League Soccer? Assuming you could clone any U.S. international players playing in MLS, that would be on both teams.
Okay, so then we'd maybe put these two teams up against each
other. Apparently, yeah.
I can't help thinking that MLS is going to be the better team.
Mm-hmm.
Because who would we lose? Major players in Europe we would lose are Christian Pulisic, obviously. Weston McKennie, obviously. Bobby Wood, Josh Sargent, Tim Weah, DeAndre Yedlin. So quite a lot of players, a lot of our attacking players.
All of our defense.
All of our defense. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think you've done this in more detail than I have. I'm going to guess that we can replace our defense with MLS players and it's more or less the same. We could replace our attack with MLS players and it's going to be better.
I would disagree with you on the first one. I don't think that's the case. I think that defense is about as strong as we could get.
Okay.
I think you're definitely right on the attack.
On the attack, yeah, because, okay, we lose Pulisic, we lose Wood, we lose Sargent, we lose Weah, but you're getting possibly Zlatan, you're getting Giovinco, you're getting Miguel Moran and Josef Martinez, like we just talked about. You could be getting Diego Valeri. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of players you could be getting, and in the end, it's an upgrade.
So yeah, I'm with you there. And then I would say, strangely, even like in midfield, we don't lose as much, because I would say really the only like key starter in terms of the center midfield we lose right now is Weston McKennie, because we still have Tyler Adams in MLS, Kellen Acosta, Michael Bradley, I know, Will Trapp, if you want to put him in there. Those are all MLS players that could still be in there.
We could be on the verge of flipping, though, if Acosta and Tyler Adams get their moves to Europe that we're hoping for and I'm sure they're hoping for, then that... Even then, it doesn't really change it, because there is enough midfield talent in Major League Soccer.
I would say Yangel Herrera, Diego Chara, Lucho Costa, Diego Valeri, as you said. There's plenty of talent right there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we could replace slash upgrade on those guys.
But I really do think, though, when it comes to the defense, goalkeepers stay the same, but when it comes to defense, that's where I think you would see the drop-off. So it comes down to, could the actual U.S. defense handle a theoretical U.S. attack? And then flipping that around, would a... not as strong U.S. defense handle the actual U.S. attack.
So if we've got a definite upgrade in attack, maybe a wash in midfield, if we're being generous to the current U.S. pool.
I feel like it's probably stronger in Major League Soccer. Then so three of the four are
so
better.
For this to come out even close to even, we would need the current U.S. defense to be significantly better than the MLS defense. So what is the... what differential have you got? Who's your defense even?
I mean,
I haven't looked at this deeply, so who's your back four of MLS players? Bearing in mind that... Major League Soccer? I mean, we know the US one, we just saw it, right? But bearing in mind that MLS does not spend much on defenders ever.
No, they
all
don't.
All the money goes up front.
That is very clear.
You sound like you've learned this deeply by looking
at me. I have. I was looking at possible right back options. I would say maybe Anton Tinnerholm, maybe Reggie Cannon, who's already in that squad as well.
Yeah, you could definitely have a Cannon v. Yedlin argument. And I feel like I could make a strong case for Cannon over Yedlin.
Yeah, left back, the same. Like Villafania could be one. Mazzarita from NYCFC. Maybe Kamar Lawrence, who's in the MLS Best 11 this year. Mm-hmm. So those are options. And then center backs, though, again, it's like Aaron Long, I think he's probably in there. He's in that MLS Best 11, but he's not starting for the current national team. So there is like a noticeable difference there, whether or not you want to say he's better or not.
I don't know. You give it a month and maybe we're talking about Aaron Long as a starting center back.
And then I would say maybe Leandro Gonzalez-Pires is the other one I'm going to throw in as a starting center back.
Ooh, yeah. I can't say I've seen enough of him to be really confident either
way. I just don't want to get yelled at by Atlanta fans.
But I was really impressed with what I saw in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you.
Okay.
So maybe it's not as big of a gulf as I thought it was, but I still think I don't know, then again, look at that England game. I don't know if anybody covered themselves in glory too much there. Maybe Anthony Robinson by not playing?
So we're going to say that the MLS team ends up being better?
Strangely, yeah. I think so. Yeah. I guess it's not that strange.
No, because of all the money spent on MLS attackers.
That's
the
thing. Yep. Yeah, I just keep thinking of it as like, for some reason my brain
defaults.
You
didn't even name Wayne Rooney.
That is true.
When we listed MLS attacker.
I think I had him as a sub.
I did it like offhand, kind of. Yeah.
I had a front three of Almiron, Martinez, and Giovinco with Rooney and Zlatan subbing in. Yeah. And so I think my brain, just because in the past when we've answered this, it's been who would win a U.S. national team of players, American players in MLS versus Americans in Europe. That's the way we usually do it. So I think that's where my brain goes to. And so it's weird to me to say like, oh, it'd be like players in MLS. That said, it might be players in MLS, even just Americans playing there.
Oh, also, I don't want to have this conversation there, but I do want to put a pin in it for maybe next week. Mm-hmm. Do you remember last week we answered the question of which European league compares to Major League Soccer in terms of the competitive experience of the players? I've heard a lot from a lot of people that maybe I ranked MLS too low by putting it level with like the Swedish league and the Swiss league. Going through that list of attacking talent, in my head I'm now realizing those attackers are not going to be playing in Scandinavia or in the Swiss league. So maybe even with the not so good defense, we should be ranking MLS higher. So if you're hold my hand and agree, not literally, maybe we revisit that question next week or something to see where MLS ranks in terms of European leagues.
Daryl Grove caving to peer pressure.
Well, kind of. I just really think if you remember, I kind of ran my mouth. I didn't think about it too much. I didn't do my research for the question, which is what I normally make sure that I do. And I just sort of ran my mouth thinking, this. And maybe I got it wrong. Maybe because Almiron, Zlatan, Giovinco, Valeri, those guys are in MLS.
Yeah.
Maybe we should be thinking of MLS as a higher level league in terms of competitive experience.
Yeah, and I think one of the key points in there, one of the tweets we got was about there's always that inclination to focus on the top tier aspects of a lot of those leagues and not look at the rest of, say, the Scottish Premier League.
Yeah, or to look at FC Basel or Young Boys of Bern and not think about what's going on farther down in the Swiss league. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying I was wrong, but I'm saying I definitely wasn't right.
Okay. stubbornness.
So a more detailed ranking in the future, maybe.
That works.
Yeah,
sure. But before we do that, we should probably do some scouting.
Yes, let's do some scouting.
All right. We've got several scouting reports to get to. But first of all, Daryl Grove, for anybody new to the show, just finding us, what is the Scouting Network? Why do we do it?
Oh, the Scouting Network. It's a thing we came up with mm-hmm. way back in the day as a way of helping ourselves finance the show through support from listeners, mm-hmm. but also giving listeners buy-in to the show by providing content in the form of scouting reports for talented young players. So we assign a talented young player for a scout once they sign up to watch, and they send us reports. And so we keep track of all these players all around the world.
We sure do.
Why have you got a weird little half smile on
that? Did I tell you that I got in a little bit of trouble for discussing the origin of the Scouting Network? Because my wife listened to that show and she was like, do you remember that I suggested the name Scouting Network? And I was like, what's that now? And she was like, yeah, that was kind of my suggestion that you And I was like, no, I didn't remember that. And she kind of remembered the specifics of the moment.
It was kind of a really good night.
We had some wild drinks.
Wild and crazy night. Yeah. I remember your wife arguing with the barman
that definitely happened.
About FAA regulations. It was that kind of night.
It was.
Your wife was right.
She was. And he was slightly discourteous. She would not stand for such things.
Yes.
So there we are.
So he gets no credit for Scouting Network.
He does not. She let him bury himself a little bit and then pulled out the actual elevation of something, and there we were. But yes, moving away from that and back to the actual Scouting Network. First report comes from Braden Elliott, scouting Chris Richards, 18-year-old American defender on loan at Bayern Munich from FC Dallas.
I know this one.
Richards was one of three players called up to the U.S. U-20s for the second group stage of the CONCACAF U-20 Championship. He joins Sebastian Soto and Serginho Dest for the games against Costa Rica on Friday and Honduras on Monday.
I'll be watching those. Are big. I'll be watching those. Those are big. Those games.
All right.
Steve Haller.
You said that like you were promising yourself.
Kind of, yeah.
All right.
Friday evening is a tough time. For example, I have an indoor game at the exact same time, so I've got to remember to hope that CONCACAFGO.com works.
It's a big old hope.
Yep. By the way, Firefox, it works in that browser. Right. And the app works if people are trying to get that going. Steve Haller is scouting Miles Robinson, 21-year-old American defender for Atlanta United. Steve says, with Jeff Lurentovic out injured, Robinson got the nod in the opening round of the playoffs. He made the most of his appearance, getting praise from Brad Guzan and Tata Martino for his efforts. While it was only his second start and seventh appearance of the season, it's still playoff experience. Mm-hmm. I actually made a note. Remember I talked about Remedy in the Atlanta game and how maybe the less famous players had really good games. Mm-hmm. I meant to also mention Miles Robinson. He did really well in that back three for Atlanta.
On behalf of Miles Robinson, apology accepted.
There we go. I'm glad that worked.
Gray Hair Gaming scouting Indiana Vasilev, 17-year-old American midfielder for Aston Villa. Indiana continues to start for the Villa U18s and has made one appearance for the U23s as well. That's the good news. The bad news would be that the Villa U18s have lost their last three games by an aggregate scoreline of 12-1. Gray Hair Gaming says he does not believe that Indiana was necessarily at fault, but it's hard to find video to confirm that theory.
Philip Andreani is scouting Andre Green, a 20-year-old English winger on loan at Portsmouth from Aston Villa. Two Aston Villa scouts in a row. Scoutees. Philip says, Andre Green returned to action for Portsmouth against Tottenham's under-21s in Pompey's 3-2 Checker Trade Trophy victory. Green scored his first goal for his loan club. It was a poacher's effort, putting the ball in on the goal line after a corner bounced around off a few Tottenham defenders.
Well done, Mr. Green. Well done to Zach Lippert for sending us a report on Izzy Brown, 21-year-old English attacker for Leeds United. Izzy is still rehabbing from his January ACL tear and remains about 2 months away from full fitness, according to Leeds coach Marco Bielsa. I'm not sure that's the name, is it? Isn't it Marcelo Bielsa?
Yes.
Get it together, Zach. Congratulations.
Are you sure that's not your typo?
Retracted. I don't think so. I'm pretty sure it was just copy and paste. Former lead striker Noel Whelan claimed Izzy Brown would be like a new signing, quote unquote, and quote, Izzy is a number 10, end quote. So it sounds like he is firmly in their plans for the future.
Doesn't even the sentence Leeds coach Marcelo Bielsa just sound bizarre?
It's what threw me off in the beginning. And it's why I was like, maybe that is his name because we live in bizarro world.
Or maybe they got a bad Bielsa brother.
That could be as well. Evil Bielsa.
Victor Savage is scouting Ricardo Kishna, the now 23-year-old Dutch left winger on loan at ADO Den Haag from Lazio. Victor says Kishna made his return in what Google Translate calls, quote, a party game, unquote.
I'm assuming that's a friendly. I could be wrong, but based on the rest of this report, I'm guessing it's a friendly.
That's a wonderful classic Google Translate thing, isn't it? Den Haag manager Alphonse Groenendijk said of his return, my football heart opened. He had a few nice dribbles. Kishna is still listed as injured on Transfermarkt and has not played in any senior or official Den Haag game this season.
I'm going to say two things. One, that was pretty good pronunciation. Number two, it's better than mine because I would have just skipped it. So well done, Daryl Grove. Final report comes from Scott and Luke Jarboe, scouting Bukayo Sako.
Yeah.
That might be my new favorite scoutee name. Takafusa Kubo is up there, but yeah, Bukayo Sako comes number two. 17-year-old English-Nigerian midfielder for Arsenal. You have to read the final sentence of this, but you can't read ahead. Don't read ahead. Close those eyes. Sako joined the England U19s for a 4-0 win over Moldova on Wednesday. Daryl Grove's eyes remain closed. Thank you, Daryl. He came on in the 82nd minute and slotted home what the English FA called a simple finish 3 minutes later. This after a star turn for the Arsenal U21s in the second round of the Czech Trade Trophy tournament versus Forest Green Rovers, where Sako showed his strength and dribbling ability as he drew a penalty, assisted on another goal, and led the line on the breakaway that led to the Young Gunners' third in a 3-1 win. Daryl Grove, bring us home.
It was a big week for the youngster, whom we expect to score a sack of goals for the Arsenal this year.
I knew it would get you. I knew it would get you.
Love it. Thank you, Scott and Luke.
I read it and I sighed and then I wanted to make sure that Daryl would read it, but I forgot to put it in the order that would guarantee that you would.
Thank you to everybody for the scouting
report. He's so happy. He's so happy with the pun.
Thank you, Braden, Steve, Greyhair, Philip, Zach, Victor, Scott, and Luke for the scouting report. If you'd like to join the Total Soccer Show Scouting Network, it is Goofy Friday, right?
It is.
It's totalsoccershow.com/join. If you've joined and you haven't received your player, please email me, Daryl, D-A-R-Y-L, at totalsoccershow.com. I will get your player to you, I promise.
He promises.
I do. All right, Taylor, what else do we have on tap going forward for the Total Soccer Show?
Well, we do not have the like full slate of weekend games because we're still in the international break.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think we're going to be back Monday to discuss a little bit of that England-Croatia game.
Yes, England-Croatia review on Monday. Again, the game is Sunday, 9 a.m. US Eastern. And I guess we'll preview Italy-USA on Monday. That game is on Tuesday afternoon,
yep.
American time.
3 p.m., I believe.
Yeah, so we're back on Monday for that. And maybe if there's any other fun UEFA Nations League action, we'll round that up later in the week.
Ah, the quizzical expression on his face when he says maybe some fun things.
Well, I've just realized, isn't it Thanksgiving week next week?
It is.
So we might, I think we should probably like shut down Thursday, Friday.
Yeah, I would agree.
Take a little time.
You're welcome to come in and record by yourself on Thursday. That's fine.
All right. Maybe we need to do a planning. We'll schedule some planning before we announce.
Fine. Let's wing it.
Before I wing it and announce what we're doing next week on the show. Feels like a good time to say, Taylor Rockwell, thank you for taking the time to talk to me today.
Right back at you, buddy.
Listeners, thank you for listening. Redditors, thank you again. The link to the Reddit page is in the show notes. We will talk to you again next week.